Welcome back to the second hour of Mad as Hell in America. I am your host, Adam Klugman. You're listening to AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's talk station. We had a smoking, red-hot first hour talking about the gathering revolution, the spirit of it, which starts with love and then rebellion. That's the order. We got to keep it about love first, rebellion second. If we ever reverse that order, we're toast, right? Because we are about love. We don't hate the system. We love the world. That's what we're all about here at Mad as Hell in America. And my next guest is somebody who has taught me a lot about what it means to love the world and the kind of commitment it takes to do it. Her name is Jeanette Pye Espinoza. She is president of the National Crittenden Foundation, nationalcrittenden.org, CRITTENTON.org. Check it out while we're talking. Jeanette is going to be here with us the whole hour, and we are going to be talking about women who have always been the victims of the power structure that we're challenging now. We're talking about a white male power structure that always marginalizes women and people of color and women of color who get the worst of it. Women who've been physically abused, sexually abused, who live in poverty. Jeanette Pye Espinoza has been at work on this for over 30 years. She took leadership of the National Crittenden Foundation in January of 2007, and she brings to this 129-year-old institution more than 30 years of experience in advocacy, education, intercultural communication, public policy, strategic communication, program development, and on and on and on. And I will be honest with you and tell you that Jeanette was once a client of mine in an earlier incarnation. She is also a friend, a colleague, and very often a teacher for me. I'm not going to keep reading her resume because it goes on and on. I'm going to welcome her to the show. Jeanette Pye Espinoza, welcome to Mad as Hell.
Thank you, Adam, for having me.
I am very glad you're here. So the first hour, you heard what we were talking about. We were talking about this gathering revolution for social change. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the attention is being focused on corporate greed and on Wall Street and challenging these Goliaths of right. the white male power structure.
Right.
But it reminded me of the Richard Pryor joke. You know, he says, when it happens to black people, it's a problem. When it happens to white people, it's an epidemic. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of white middle class and a lot of people of color in the middle class who are being gutted. And when it starts happening there, then we respond. But mm-hmm. there are people who've been victims of this white male Goliath of a power structure throughout human right. history. And I think that's where this conversation starts. So talk about your work and how, and I said in the introduction that these are often women. They're often women of color. Mm-hmm. So talk about how that relates to the work that you do.
Sure. So the National Crittenden Foundation works with direct service agencies all over the country that provide support to girls and young women between the ages of maybe 10 and 27. Most of these young women are survivors of abuse, neglect, and violence. In this country, we don't understand or we allow to be invisible the fact that one-third of all girls are victims of sexual abuse before they're 14.
One-third.
That's one out of every three young women. And it tracks when you look at figures for adult women. Adult women will say about 32-33% will say that they experienced some sort of violence or abuse as children. So that's one-third of all the women and all the girls in America that have had some experience with violence in their young lives. So we work on supporting them so that they can heal, so that they can feel empowered, and they can become positive, contributing members of society.
So there were this idea of that what happens to these women, right? Mm-hmm. So first of all, kind of give us a picture of who they are. I mean, they sure. are women of all color, but they are disproportionately sure. women of color, yes?
Sure, they're all women. I think the distinguishing factor for us, the vast majority of the young women that our agency serve are young women of color, are low-income women. And it depends on where you are in the country. If you're in the hills of Kentucky or Tennessee, they tend to be white, low income. Right. Obviously, in your metropolitan areas, are going to be more young women of color. So disproportionately, though, overall, if you look at the country, they're disproportionately more young women of color. It happens to middle class and upper class girls and young women, too. The difference is they have resources. They have support. So they can get the therapy They can get the counseling. They can get what they need in order to heal. They can go into a hospital. They can, you know, or they have enough money, quite frankly, to just keep on plodding ahead because they've got all the resources at their disposal. Our clients aren't able to do that.
And so let's talk about the National Crittenden Foundation. We're saying it's a 129-year-old organization.
Right.
And you've been kind of charged with bringing it into the 21st century. So why don't we start with what it was and what you're making it into?
Sure. We were founded in 1883, and at that time we were founded by Charles Crittenden, who realized that there was no place for women to go if they wanted to leave violent relationships, if they were single and pregnant, if they were being trafficked for sex, if they were immigrant women who came over on the boat, got off the boat, there's nobody there to meet them. Surprise, they're on their own.
Like the mail-order brides.
Pretty much, yeah. Exactly. So there was no place for women to go because all their refuge homes, if you will, were for men. So he started a chain of homes to support these women. And by the early 1900, there were 76 of these homes in five countries. Essentially, fast forward to 2011, we are working with young women who have been trafficked for sex.
Yeah.
Young women who are in violent relationships. They're incest survivors. They're in violent relationships. Their parents are abusing and neglecting them. Hasn't really changed too much.
Yeah, that's as you were going through the litany, I'm thinking, wow, it really the issues have not changed that much.
No.
Our guest is Jeanette Pye Espinosa. She is president of the National Crittenden Foundation, nationalcrittenden.org. That's C-R-I-T-T-E-N-T-O-N. And the predicate for this whole show is that we work with love. We work from love. We work with love first. That's why we do what we do. That is our controlling and governing principle as we move through the idea of social change. And I know that you and I sometimes have long conversations, and then finally you just kind of throw it all away and say, it's just about the girls. Mm-hmm. And I know that you love the girls, and that's what motivates you. So, so let's talk about this campaign of We Are Not Invisible. Mm-hmm. I find this very exciting. So part of how I see you trying to bring this into the 21st century is by talking about visibility.
Right.
That we're kind of moving away from this idea that it's happening to millions of girls.
Mm-hmm.
It's like one unit of millions that it's happening, but it's what it's really going on is that it's happening to one girl millions of times.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a deeply personal, deeply mm-hmm. traumatizing event to be sexually abused, mm-hmm. Physically abused. So talk about this We Are Not Invisible campaign.
Sure. We Are Not Invisible comes from the premise that obviously they are invisible in politics and society and school, in terms of, you know, economic equity. As girls, they are invisible. They're marginalized. They live on the very edge. We like to say they live on the margin of the American dream. They see it, but they can't quite get there because they're so far out. So I have to believe that if more Americans knew that they were out there, if they knew the facts, if they knew that 61% of all females raped in this country are under the age of 18,
my gosh.
If they knew that the average age a young woman is trafficked is 11 or 12 in this country, to be sold in this country, I think that if people knew that, and if there were faces and hearts and minds connected to these statistics, that people would care and they would do something. So based on that, We Are Not Invisible is about providing opportunities for young women who have survived these experiences to tell their story. To tell their story and to explain why, even in the context of all the horrors that they endured, they are hopeful and they have potential and they want to contribute and they want to make the world a better place.
And what happens to them when you help them tell their stories? I mean, how does that heal them? What goes on when you empower them to tell their own stories?
Well, I think it's transformative because, you know, young women in this country who, let's say, are in foster care or are in juvenile justice or have addiction issues or who have experienced some sort of sexual or physical violence, they get labeled as bad girls. And once a girl is labeled a bad girl, it's hard to come back from that. You've heard the old adage, you know, they're bad girls and then boys will be boys.
Right.
So if you look at the adolescent process, right, boys almost are expected to kind of sow their wild oats. Girls, once they're spoiled and they're bad girls, they can't come back from that. Well, they internalize that.
Right.
So they internalize that and they feel powerless and they feel like they're bad girls. They know they're marginalized. They know they're invisible. And all of a sudden, someone is saying, come to Washington, D.C. and tell your story to people who can make a difference. And it really is transformative.
Our guest is Jeanette Pye Espinosa. She is president of the National Crittenden Foundation, nationalcrittenden.org. That's C-R-I-T-T-E-N-T-O-N. I do want your calls if you'd like to talk to Jeanette. If you've experienced this and you want to talk about it, if you know someone who's experienced this, give us a call, 503-248-0620, 1-866-452-0620. Charisse is going to be on the show in the third segment, and she's going to tell us her story. And I think that it takes courage to tell your story because, as you say, You tend to internalize it. When you're victimized, you think, well, it's me, I'm bad. There's a certain, there's a deep level of badness that starts to set in to your own self-image. And I imagine beginning to tell your story and getting the girls to advocate for themselves is an incredibly powerful part of the process. Again, the numbers are 503-248-0620, 1-866-452-0620. We're talking about love as social change. And what I know is true about Jeanette is that she works with a complete and total commitment to the girls themselves. This work is about the girls. And trying to, we were talking the other day about moving out of charity-mindedness, that we were talking about sex trafficking is kind of the cause célèbre right now. And it's an important topic. But there's a certain comfortable distance that we get when we can look at it and go, oh, God, that's so terrible. It's happening over there. Right. But the reality is it's happening here in our country.
Right. It is happening here in our country. And it is a horrible thing, and no one should have to live with that. But again, it's a symptom of a society that doesn't value girls. It's a symptom of a society that is willing to look away when it's convenient. And my, you know, my our sort of perspective on girls who are trafficked for sex is it is very easy for the average American to disassociate from that behavior, right?
Yeah.
I'm not going to, you're not going to, most people that we know are not going to buy a girl who's really a child for sex. So it's the other. It's the horrible other, right? And we can rail against it, and we can give money, and we can volunteer. But that same person who will rail against it and who will give money may live in a home where there's domestic violence, may have been an incest survivor, may be a perpetrator of incest or neglect, may have witnessed a rape and not done anything about it. So the degree to which we don't recognize it in our own life, we're able to escape accountability for doing anything for it, doing anything about it.
That's great. Jeanette Pius-Spinoza is our guest, the president of the National Crittenden Foundation, nationalcrittentonfoundation.org, C-R-I-T-T-E-N-T-O-N. If you'd like to speak with Jeanette, if you have a story you want to tell, if you want to talk about this, how it impacts you and your community, 503-248-0620, 1-866-452-0620. Jeanette, when we come back, I want to talk about the role of sexism and kind of the unconscious sexism and how that factors into all of this. When we come back, it's Jeanette Pius-Spinoza. This is Matt Asell. We'll be right back.
No mother, no father, no home.
Welcome back to Mad as Hell in America. I'm your host, Adam Klugman. You're listening to AM 620 KPOJ. That is Tracy Chapman, Let It Rain. It's a beautiful, beautiful song that I think was appropriate for the conversation we're having. My guest is Jeanette Pius-Spinoza. She is president of the National Crittenden Foundation, nationalcrittenton.org. C-R-I-T-T-E-N-T-O-N.org. I want to take a minute before we get back into the conversation to encourage you to go there and to donate money. I can make this ask because money is one of the ways that we empower the people who are doing the work in the world to continue to do it. And I know that what the National Crittenden has been doing for 129 years has been dedicating it to those people in our society, generally women and women of color in particular, who are just abandoned and blamed and forgotten. So go to nationalcrittenton.org, C-R-I-T-T-E-N-T-O-N. Give money, check it out, become a part of it. It's really important work that we're doing because the whole conversation we're having is about we're challenging this Goliath of a white power structure with love. right? Love, then rebellion, not in a different order. So we start with love and we move toward change. That's how we get the change that we want. So Jeanette, welcome back to the show.
Thanks.
So I kind of introed what was going on. If you want to join the conversation with us in a minute, we're going to meet a woman named Charisse, who's going brave enough to come on the show and tell her own story, who has worked through a lot of these issues. But before we get into that, right before we went into the break, I said I wanted to talk a little, you know, some of the, what you've taught me about my own biases mm-hmm. that I don't see, are my own unconscious racism, my own unconscious sexism. I think a lot of liberals feel like, well, gosh, I'm one of the good guys. Mm-hmm. But they don't see how their own unconscious attitudes towards race and gender factor in. So how do our own sexist attitudes, which I directly equate with racism, I mean, I don't think that there's any hierarchy there. Racism right. and sexism are on the same level. How does sexism play a role in how we treat these victims?
Well, I think one of the places where it's easiest to see that if we look at society at large is if we look at young parenthood. So we have young men and young women, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, engaging in sex, and they get pregnant. Obviously, the woman is the one who carries the child. And we look at all the talk about, you know, what happens when a young woman becomes pregnant. You know, what does a young mother do? She's a bad girl. You know, why did she get pregnant? What's she going to do?
We
She's
blame
end
her.
Up poor. Yeah, we blame her. She's going to be poor for the rest of her life. And, you know, the horrible, you know, what's her child's life going to be like? And, oh, woe is me. She's a bad girl. She's a bad girl. She's a bad girl. We don't talk about the father.
Right.
We don't talk about the father. We don't demand accountability. We don't demand responsibility. We don't provide support for him as we attempt to provide support for the mother. And so that's why we see statistics like, you know, 3/4 of the people living in poverty are women and children.
3/4 of the people.
Yes.
Living in poverty are women and their children.
Yes. Yes.
And that's happening right here in this country. That's not happening
yes.
overseas somewhere. That's America.
Yes.
I mean, that's what I think we're talking about. This idea of that it's happening somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know who Susan Wicklund is?
Mm-hmm.
She wrote a book called This Common Secret about mm-hmm. all women who kind
right.
of had abortions and hid it.
Right.
And then a lot of her work. And she was an abortion doctor for a long time
right.
and talking about how important it was for not just the women, but for us as society to be able to talk about this openly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's so much shame around it.
Right.
And there's all this like weird sexual energy around it for men. For example, I think about how the Johns, nothing ever happens to the Johns, right?
Right.
The girls are the criminals, but the Johns
right.
get to go home and maybe if they're lucky, their wives don't find out, right?
Right.
I mean, but that's ludicrous. That
right.
That's exactly what we're talking about.
Right. It's the sort of double standard on which our society is based. And that's not to say that people who are who are subject to that are necessarily bad or malevolent people. It's in the air that we breathe in this society. It's very unconscious.
It is very unconscious, and I think that we all have to be able to have a conversation. That's why I love the We Are Not Invisible campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Our guest is Jeanette Pye Espinosa. She is president of the National Crittenden Foundation, charged with bringing a 129-year-old organization up to and into the 21st century. NationalCrittenton.org, CRITTENTON. Check it out. Tell me a little bit. In the next segment, we're going to meet a young woman who's
right.
going to come on the air and tell us her story.
Mm-hmm.
Her name is Charisse.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about the work that you're doing. I mean, you've taken this idea of telling your own story
mm-hmm.
to a pretty powerful extreme. So
mm-hmm.
let's talk about that. Well, what is that work all about?
We are bringing young women from all over the country of all ages. Charisse is actually, she was with our agency in West Virginia a number of years ago. So she's 30 plus, and she has a daughter who's just graduated from high school. So we bring women across the continuum. So someone like Charisse, who has sort of the years behind her so that she can look back on her experience, we bring young women like her. But we also bring young women who are active clients now, who are, in fact, I was just in D.C. with two young women. One is 14 and one is 16, talking about their stories.
So rather than having you there or somebody who everybody expects to be there telling, sure, advocating for them, you have them in Washington, D.C., telling, yes, their own stories, advocating for themselves, yes, and those that they represent who are just like them.
Exactly. We fly them to Washington, D.C. We do a little bit of work with them. We do not script them. We don't believe in that. We believe their story is their story to tell. We don't tell them what to say. We don't make them write it down. We don't approve it. It is their story to tell. They are sharing the essence of what they've experienced and their knowledge about what works and what doesn't work to help young women like them.
I mean, what I really like about that is that it's a kind of an in-your-face style because, I mean, everybody expects someone like you to show up. Somebody very civil and organized, mm-hmm, and well-presented and, mm-hmm, and to make the case for this heart-rending cause.
Sure.
But what you've done is taken the girls and have them advocate for themselves. And that has, yes, to rattle some cages from time,
sure,
to time.
Sure it does. And even in the field, if you will, there's some people who would say that's exploiting the young women. I think there are ways that where you do it, where it is exploitation.
I think if you script them, it's...
If you script them and, yeah, you want them to do a commercial for your organization, we don't even tell them to mention the word Crittenden. We really just want them to tell their stories. And we provide adequate support for them. We don't want any chance that they're going to be re-traumatized by the experience. So we bring chaperones and therapists and we pay lost wages and blah, 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 blah.
When we come back, we're going to meet one of these young girls who is advocating for herself in Washington, D.C. Charisse, you're listening to Mad as Hell in America. I'm your host, Adam Klugman. Our guest is Jeanette Pai-Espinosa. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Mad as Hell in America. I'm your host, Adam Klugman. You're listening to AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's talk station. We used to say only progressive talk station. We've removed progressive from the equation, which I actually really like. I don't want to look, you know, it doesn't have to be progressive talk. I'm a progressive. You can call me and talk about anything you want. But I'm going to talk about progressive politics. Our guest is Jeanette Pai-Espinosa. She is president of the National Crittenden Foundation, and she has been charged with taking a 129-year-old organization called the National Crittenden Foundation and bringing it into the 21st century. And she is doing some really amazing, interesting, and really paradigm-shifting work, which is what we're talking about. We're talking about shifting the whole paradigm of this Goliath of a white power structure that has now marginalizing the middle class, but has been marginalizing women and women of color since its inception. Actually, throughout human history, mm-hmm, it seems that patriarchy does that best. It marginalizes women and particularly women of different colors. So Jeanette Pai-Espinosa is here. She is our guest. NationalCrittenden.org is the website. I want to encourage you to go there, get involved, give money, find out what's going on, because this is really exciting paradigm shifting work. And we were talking a little bit before the break. We're going to meet Charisse, who is someone who's going to tell her own story. And the work that you're doing is a lot about getting women to tell your own story. The campaign, right, is We Are Not Invisible. Mm-hmm. And rather than you going to D.C., which I'm sure you do often,
sure,
and advocating for them from the comfortable, in comfortable chairs, in comfortable positions, you've actually encouraged the girls to go to D.C. and to begin to advocate for themselves.
Right.
And that is a game changer, yes?
Yes. Yes. For us, for them, and for the country, hopefully.
Yeah. Because the only way you become visible is when you demand to be seen. And, you know, that is what's consistent with what we're seeing going on around the country. That's why, right, I think the work that you're doing fits perfectly into what we've been talking about the whole show, which is, mm-hmm, we demand to be seen,
right,
and heard as legitimate members of a democracy. Tell us about Charisse. I want to have her introduce herself in a minute, but we're going to bring her on. But tell me a little bit about Charisse.
Charisse is amazing. Charisse is a woman who, if you heard sort of the details of her early life, her story, you would not imagine that probably that she would even be around, that she would have kept her daughter, that she would be successful, happy, and going to Washington, D.C. today. She's amazing.
So I'm going to bring Charisse on. Charisse, are you there?
I am.
Well, welcome to Mad as Hell in America. Do you agree with Jeanette's assessment and her introduction of you?
Well, yes, absolutely. Thank you, Jeanette.
You're welcome.
Well, what struck me was that what she said was that if we heard your story, we'd be surprised that you would even be around. So what I'd love to do is kind of take our listeners through the process. Let's hear your story. We've got about 10 minutes in this segment. I would like to hear your story, and then I would like to come back and talk very personally with you about what telling your story does and the kinds of reactions that you've got. So Charisse, you have the floor. Go ahead, tell our listeners your story.
Well, my story started very early in life. I began being abused probably at about 4 years old. I was being sexually abused.
Four?
Four.
My goodness.
And my mother walked out around that same time. And it was just a situation where initially I was 4 years old. It was happening. I knew that it made me feel uncomfortable. It made me feel weird. But I didn't really know why those things were happening. So later on in life, I found out that was absolutely wrong. It should not have been happening to me. And I have to say, it happened while I was four. It lasted for a couple of years, and then it stopped. But then when I was about 9 years old, it began to happen again. And I think that's where the bulk of the emotional trauma occurred, because I knew it was wrong. I knew it was happening to me, and there was nothing that I really could do to stop it. Ever since I could ever remember, I had this feeling like there was no one in the world that loved me. There was no one that was ever going to protect me, stand up for me. And I had this low self-esteem about myself. It's like I look in the mirror and think that I was a pretty girl, but I didn't think anyone around me saw me as a pretty girl. So by the time I was 13, I made the decision to kill myself, and I acted on that. And it wasn't a situation where I was looking for attention. I really, truly wanted to die, and I obviously did not succeed.
Thank goodness. What was the feeling that you were carrying? I mean, I know that Jeanette and I were talking earlier. Can you describe the feeling that made you want to take your own life? What were you living with?
I just felt like no one loved me and no one cared about me. And I tried to be nice to my family and everyone around me, but I felt like people saw me as an ugly girl. And, you know, I had a stepmom, I had a dad, and, you know, they would bring up different things about my biological mother and how I wasn't going to be like her. But at the same time, they were insinuating that I was going to be a bad girl, that I was going to be promiscuous, and at that time I had never done anything with anyone. All of the sexual experiences I ever had were from abuse.
So at that point, you're 13 years old, the only sexual experiences you've had are from abusers.
Correct.
Oh my goodness.
Correct. And, you know, and it happened, you know, several times, perpetually throughout my childhood, you know, and then as I got older, I went on ahead and moved to West Virginia with my biological mother at 15, and it began again, except this time it was drug dealers that were coming in and out of the house, and, you know, they were having their way with me. They were men in their 30s. They were men in their late 20s, and I couldn't take it anymore, so the day that I turned 16, I got a job, and I moved out. Unfortunately, by that time, I was making the decision to start having sex with people. And a few months later, I found myself pregnant and homeless because I had lost my dog. And that's how I found my way to the Crittenden home in West Virginia.
How did you find your way to the Crittenden home? How did you actually finally plug in there?
I was at school. And I was taking piano lessons at my high school, and I was sitting in the piano room just crying. And my teacher, I was acting out pretty bad and finally, and really mean to her, quite frankly. She just said, "What is going on?" And I just broke down and started crying and said, "You know, I'm pregnant. I'm homeless. I don't have anywhere to go." And the Crittenden home in Wheeling did outreach at the high school. And so they put me in touch with the Crittenden home. They weren't able to take me at that time, actually. And so I had to go into holding in a state group home for about 4 months before I was able to go to the home there in Wheeling.
With your child? No.
I was pregnant.
You were pregnant. You were pregnant at the time. I want to bring. I want to bring Jeanette into the conversation. So, how typical is Charisse's story so far? I mean, is it, how often is this happening? And is this a fairly typical story that we're dealing that the Crittenden is dealing with girls who've been abused since ages 4, 5, 6? I mean, is that fairly common?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think that the particulars about Charisse's story may be different from the next girl, but I think that certainly the self-esteem issues, the sort of lack of unconditional love and support and security and safety, it's almost all of them.
I mean, it's unimaginable. We were talking, Charisse, about this internalized badness. I mean, I would imagine that you somehow, somewhere, you had blamed yourself for all of this up until the point at which you got to Crittenden, right? I mean, there was got to be this deep-seated, like, cellular self-attack going on, yes?
Oh, absolutely. And even, you know, that's the thing. Even after all the therapy I've been through, all the success I've been through, I tend to blame myself. And I have to kind of talk myself down and say, you know what? You know, this is not you. that's a they problem, not a you problem, sort of a thing. But, you know, it was always, I always just felt, why can't I be like everyone else? Why can't I be like other people? I can't, you know, why can't it just be all right?
I imagine you must still struggle with those feelings. I mean, I think that the nature of trauma is that in a way we don't recover from it. What we do are build alternate structures that we can inhabit and then that contend with the trauma that you carry. But I imagine it's something you still must struggle with regularly.
You know, it's not as bad as it was. And I know that Good. You guys were talking a little bit earlier about, you know, the way that when we speak. And really and truly, it was when I began speaking that I could really move outside of that.
So let's talk about that. I mean, this is, we are by nature storytellers. I think stories are how we define ourselves as human beings. So when Jeanette was telling me about the work that she was doing, getting you and other young women who've been abused to tell their own stories, that was when some kind of really quantum kind of healing started to take place. So tell me through that process, like take me to the point where somebody asked you, hey, do you want to go to Washington, D.C. and tell your own story? What was your first reaction?
I was like crying because as a child and growing up, I just would always say, I just hope this isn't in vain. I know that everything happens for a reason. And so when I originally got to go to D.C. and I believe it was 2008, and I just knew, I was like, okay, it makes sense. And now I feel like it's okay. It's all going to be okay. I'm going to give people a voice, you know, maybe women who don't feel like they can talk about it. I'm going to be able to speak on their behalf. I'm going to be able to shed some light on an issue that happens, I think, more than 1 out of 3, because now that I'm telling my story on a national level, I talk about it in my personal life. And I've had grown men and I've had women admit to me, I was abused as a child. I had a man, 43 years old, that confided in me and said, yes, my teacher abused me as a child. And so that makes me feel like, okay, what happened to me was not in vain, and I am making a difference here in around me and on a national level.
I get it. So it's this idea that we craft our pain and our trauma into a purpose, and when we do that, we begin to heal. This idea, Charisse, that by talking about it, you're drawing people out, and that you're finding that you're not alone, and that it's not your fault. I mean, when you go to the Crittenden website, National Crittenden, CRITTENTON.org, you see the We Are Not Invisible campaign, and then there's this kind of flash movie that happens, and then one of the other ones, the other cards reads, "It is not my fault." I think that it's important for us to be able to admit that it wasn't your fault. Was that hard for you? What happened for you when you finally came to the realization that you admitted it wasn't your fault?
I I had to find out why it happened. That just kind of spilled over into something else, you know. Okay, if it wasn't my fault and it should have never happened, then why did it happen?
Oh.
And, you know, I got answers through Crittenden Services of Wheeling. I obtained those answers, and knowing why it happened allowed me to move forward as well.
Our guest is Charisse. She is here with Jeanette Pai-Espinosa from the National Crittenden Foundation, nationalcrittenden.org, C-R-I-T-T-E-N-T-O-N. Go check it out. Charisse, will you stay with us across the break and talk a little bit more about this? If you'd like to join this conversation, 503-248-0620, 1-866-452-0620. I know that this is really hard to talk about, and Charisse, I really appreciate your courage in being so open and talking so openly. I know that it will encourage others to tell their story as well. You're listening to Mad as Hell in America on 620 KPOJ. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Mad as Hell in America. I'm your host, Adam Klugman. This is AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's talk station. We are having a difficult but essential conversation with Jeanette Pai-Espinosa of the National Crittenden Foundation, nationalcrittenden.org, C-R-I-T-T-E-N-T-O-N, about women who are victims of sexual and physical abuse, who fall off into the margins of our society and then get forgotten and ignored and continue to be abused. And what the Crittenden Foundation does is reach out to those girls. It's actually a 129-year-old institution that Jeanette Pai-Espinosa has been charged with bringing into the 21st century. She has done that brilliantly, I think, by bringing these girls in through the agencies, helping them to heal, and then asking them to tell their stories on their own behalf. We just heard from Charisse, who dropped off, but she's back. Charisse, welcome back to the show. Are you there, Charisse? There you are.
All right.
Okay, we're back. In a minute, this is a very short segment, and I have what I think is a remarkable call from someone who was actually born in a Crittenden home. So I'd like to take that call, and then after that, I want to talk about how this is a cycle and how we break these intergenerational cycles of abuse. But first, let's go to the call. Carol, welcome to Mad as Hell in America, Carol. You were born at a Crittenden home?
I was born in Florence Crittenden home in Fargo, North Dakota in 1943. I'm 68.
Wow.
Wow.
Hi, Carol.
Hi. And my mother's choice at that time, it was a difficult one. She could keep me, which they did not recommend.
Right.
But she ended up keeping me. And she told me a lot about the girls that were in there. And she said there were 12-year-old girls in there that played with dolls.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Wow.
But to me, it was she made the right choice. It's been it's not been an easy life, but I think it's been a good life.
That is really good to hear. I love the tone in your voice when you say that, Carol. I'm glad that you feel that way. That's huge. That just affirms everything that we've been talking about. Thanks for calling in. I know that that's not always easy. So thank you, Carol.
All right. Thank you.
Wow. That was a great call.
Thank you, Carol.
Someone, I love the way she closed. It hasn't been an easy life, but it's been a good one.
It's not common at that time for the young girls to have kept their babies. So.
Right. So the wisdom at that time was, you know, don't let them get attached and separate them. And right.
For the most part, I mean, Crittenden was always known for keeping mother and babies together. Our founders felt that the mothers, the babies, and society would be better off if they stayed together. But still, that was very much not sort of what that's not what society wanted. So it was still a difficult choice, even though Crittenden supported it.
So let's talk, Charisse, welcome back. Charisse, let's talk quickly about, unfortunately, we're up against a really hard break that I can't negotiate. This idea of intergenerational cycles. Jeanette and I were talking at the break about how this was an intergenerational cycle. Was your mother abused?
My father was abused.
Oh.
My mother was bipolar. My mother actually had a wonderful life. But she was diagnosed as being bipolar. So that was where the abuse came, you know, as far as from her side. But my father was abused by his father. And that was a very, it was just abusive home.
I see.
My, you know, there's a lot of evidence. We're African-American, so we can't, you know, say one way or the other, but it, there's a lot of evidence that leads to the fact that my grandfather probably killed my grandmother. So it was just a nasty situation. And for me, I just knew that I was going to love my daughter and give her all that I possibly could. And I can say I've never abused my daughter. She's always had been very, very well loved and very well nurtured throughout her whole life.
Well, there you go. That's how you break the intergenerational cycle.
Exactly.
Charisse, thank you so much for being
thank
on the
you,
show.
Charisse.
I really
thank you.
Thanks for telling
me.
Your own story and go get him in DC.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye.
Our guest has been Jeanette Pye Espinosa, president of the National Crittenden Foundation, nationalcrittenden.org, CRITTENTON.org. Go over there, check out their We Are Not Invisible campaign. Get involved, give money. If you're someone who is a victim, talk about it. Reach out to Crittenden. We have to bring this to the forefront of our society. These are the tough conversations that we have to have if we're going to take it out of charity and into transformation. This is Adam Klugman for Mad as Hell in America. Jeanette, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you, Adam.
This is AM 620. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Occupy Portland movement. We're going to kick some butt here in Portland, so stay with us.